Welcome to our podcast dedicated to sight reading through the lens of the historically informed performance practice. And today, we have a guest.
Hello, thank you for having me. My name is Tim Karweik. I'm a choir conductor and also a singer. I live in Lübeck, which is at the Baltic Sea. And I also was born there. And I mostly sing with ensembles and, of course, you guessed it, early music. I also was an organist for a few years, but that's already quite a while ago.
And what are you doing here in Basel?
Well, I had a concert here in Switzerland with my ensemble The Present, which was in Werdenberg, which is near Liechtenstein, and so I decided to just make that quick detour to, on my way home, and now I'm here for a few hours. We should also mention that, of course, we planned this. I mean, the story behind this is that we both have early music podcasts, so we quickly got aware of each other because there's not that many people like us. So we decided to make a collaboration if it's possible sometime. And yeah, it's really nice here.
Thank you very much for passing by, and we are happy to have you here. So could you tell us more about your main activity, and how did you come to that, and what have you been doing before?
Well, as a choir conductor, I have got two choirs, and one choir is a classical choir, and the other one, they sing everything but classical music. The other part of my music business is singing, where I mostly sing in churches, so whenever there's a Bach cantata, they hire me as a tenor. And then I really enjoy singing with different ensembles, mostly with The Present, which is an ensemble that is dedicated to mixing early music with modern music. So, for example, we have a program where we sort of entwine the Bach motets for eight voices with Luciano Berio's A Ronne, and we love exploring these connections between these parts of music history. So now I'm a self-employed musician, but before that I studied musicology and made my degree, and then parallel I made an apprenticeship as a church musician, which is a degree in Germany for part-time jobs at a church. So 50% of my day was church, making church music, playing the organ and conducting a choir and so on. I did that for about 5 years right after I studied musicology, and then the singing got more and more involved.
Maybe you can tell us also more about your musical background, and how did you become a musician, and maybe how music entered your life, maybe about your childhood.
Yeah, it's really strange, but to me it was always really clear that I will become a musician. Although my parents were no professional musicians, they were very passionate singers, and my father also is a kind of a semi-professional singer. But somehow I always thought I'm going to become a musician. And then I tried different instruments, and I sang in a boys choir in my hometown, which is Lübeck. And as I finished school, I just had a really, really lazy period in my life where I wanted to become a conductor, but I was really not that... I didn't have the discipline to practicing the piano and so on. So I, because I wanted to have some connection to music. I studied musicology because I always loved early music. Studying musicology was not the worst decision I made.
So you have a podcast and it's in German, so it might be useful for those people who would like to discover some early music. Maybe they don't speak English, so they could listen to your podcast. Could you tell us about the idea, the concept of your podcast? What was the main motivation for you? So maybe this kind of existential questions, what led to this idea of starting a podcast and why this format?
I'm also a little bit of a gear nerd, so I love microphones and recording stuff and discovering all these things. So the obvious choice was to make a podcast about early music, but coming from musicology, I knew how hard it would be to explain or just talk about things without being too boring or too long or just frankly having too much work with this kind of things. And I always loved the aspect of playfulness and improvisation. So I wanted to connect theory and practice to, that's why my podcast is called Spielplatz, Playground. Because as much as I like thinking or talking about early music, I think it's important to apply them at the same time and really always have the connection between theory and practice. And it's in German because, I mean, yeah, just listen to these long pauses I have to take in English.
Maybe you could also share your experience of the time, because for me, our project Inside Reading Enlightenment exists now more than a year. And it's really interesting to see the dynamic and the development. So maybe you already have some overall experience with it and what direction you would like to develop with your podcast. Maybe also tell our listeners more about the behind the scenes, like microphones. I don't know, how do you record? What is the process of your recording? How do you combine the elements, the musical elements, the talking part? Maybe there is a certain logic behind that.
To be honest, I can't really tell you anything about the development because I just I'm really afraid to look at the numbers. So how many people listen to it? When did they stop listening? How old are they? I mean, I get some feedback and I'm really happy about it. But I think it's better for my personal sanity to not look at those numbers or just read too much into comments or stuff like that. And to give you a quick behind the scenes look, so what I love is having really, really lots of gear to make the sound as good as possible. But then I love also the idea of just having not to edit things, so to make it as natural as possible and as much as a sort of casual conversation between friends who then just pick up their instruments and start playing. So of course I also edit some parts when something goes wrong or a guest says, let's cut that out. Normally I visit my guests and then it takes a really good amount of time to just set up all my stuff, and then we record for 45 minutes and then I leave them. So normally I have two condenser microphones with big membranes for each of us to record the voices, and then for the instruments I have condenser microphones with a small membrane, and all of the sound goes into my mixer, which is also a multi-track recording device with an SD card, and I can use it as an interface. It's a Zoom L12, for those of you who want to know. It's what we call Eierlegende Wollmilchsau in German, which means, or just Google it. Your vocabulary will become richer, and your life in general. And when the recording is done, I record an introduction at home to just introduce the guest and to explain what will happen in the next half hour or so. Well, then I have my introduction music for the beginning and the end, which is always the same, and voila! I always think of a certain topic or element from early music which could be interesting both theoretically and practically, so that we talk about something during the interview, and then my guest or I just show that, or we try to play with it. So there's not that much of a given structure, just some key points that we talk about, and some musical elements that we play then. I should maybe also mention the name of my podcast, right? It's called Spielplatz Alte Musik, and you can find me on Instagram and can download the episodes wherever you get your podcasts.
So today we are reading some Bichinia from the collection of Pierre Falaise, printed in Antwerp. And the first publication was in 1577. The second one is 1519. And yes, that's mostly the collection of Bichinias written by Orlando di Lasso. Yes, it's the composer that probably experienced the most changes of his name. So in this collection, he's called Orlando Lasuccio, which is sweet, I find. And but not only, also in this collection we have a song by Josquin and some instrumental parts, like different sorts of fantasia or fantasias, meant to be played with two melodic instruments by various composers. And there was even one by, I don't remember which one, but it was a literal battaglia that follows the course of the battle and describes maybe the story of a battle with different signals. And maybe for now we are not used to this rhetorics and this discourse anymore, but at that time people would recognize some signs of what is happening in this battle. So but this was last week I read it with Johanna Bartz, but today we are just two of us, so I play traverso and Tim is going to sing. By the way, the print is very beautiful, and it has King David on the cover playing his harp. If you would like to discover this print for yourself, I will put links in the description box and you can just follow the music.
Justine.
So it's a beautiful piece. I would say, in a way, it sounds philosophical. Here is the translation of the text. Blessed is the man who shall continue in wisdom and who shall meditate in his justice and in his mind shall think of the all-seeing eye of God. Okay, Tim, how did you find this part for yourself? You were singing the tenor part, which is called here the altus, but no problem, you could read it.
Well, first of all, you're right. You can't really trust the names of the voices for the singing parts. Here it's an altus voice, and you kind of have to look where the clef is, and then is it more than a fifth above that clef, the ambitus, and if not, it's likely singable for me, which is the case here. Luckily for me, I sang a lot of early music from manuscripts already, so I'm quite used to it, although I don't do it that often nowadays. But I would also say that once you get to know these few special signs and you get used to the old clefs, it's kind of the easiest style to sing this, I mean the vocal polyphony, because there's not that many leaps. Of course, the rhythm is a little more difficult than with Mozart, but it's really, it has a smooth way of singing. Now, Di Lasso is a little bit tricky because, I mean, he's at the end of the Renaissance, so he already has got some leaps. He loves just jumping up a small sixth, which is what he does two times in here, I think. So these are the more demanding parts. But then on the other hand, that's what makes this piece also really beautiful and interesting. And then of course the placement of the text in general, which is always a little uncertain. I mean, it's not that ambiguous here, it's quite clear where the text should go, but there are some manuscripts from that time where you kind of have to just go through it and sometimes guess where the text should go and what syllable should be put where. You kind of can go by the rule of thumb that the second to last syllable has got most of the notes in a phrase. So that's a way to get your way through this piece by sight reading.
The second motet is also in Latin, and here I decided to accompany Tim with a bass flute, which was an interesting experience. So I played the lower part, and the beautiful, soft, magic sound of the bass flute, I thought it really supported your shining color of the voice. And in this motet, it's an image of the Holy Mary, and it is compared to the flower, to the rose.
Yeah, and also this music is, for me at least, it's really tiring. Not because it's boring, but because it demands a lot of concentration. So, because nothing really repeats, you know, it's always a stream of different rhythms, and of course that's what they wanted. They want to sort of hide the beat or the pulse behind a musical piece, to just make it more heavenly, and that is really always gets terrific results, but it's also really challenging. But I absolutely agree. This low flute was really the best choice for this piece, just because of the sort of sweetness, and it feels like a warm embrace from Maria.
So the very last piece we are doing today, it's in German, and it is from the collection of Georg Rau. He published 2 books of Bicinia in German, French, and Latin. It is the melody that maybe you guys, our listeners, will recognize, because maybe some of you played it, or maybe some of you experienced that with Paul Hofheimer, and his Mein Einiges A. But here we have a different text, so you will hear the difference. Yes, so exactly. These Bicinia are Gallica Latina Germanica, published in 1545. The front page is very beautiful, also with the King David and his harp, but in a very, let's say, romantic representation. We experimented with this song where I tried to play one octave higher, how it would usually sound, but in this case we tried different possibilities, and I found that the flute sounding at pitch, that was the best one, because it was kind of then blending together with your voice. Fantastic music, really beautiful.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, in this era, it's all about balance. Whenever you make a leap upwards, it should always be followed by some stepwise motion downwards, and you can't have too many leaps in the same direction, and so on. So also regarding the ambitus of the voices, or I mean, when you have two voices, they shouldn't be that far apart from each other, so to make it more balanced. This one was really a pleasure for me, because I had no complicated rhythms. I had to sing the melody of the song, and you had the sort of playful part around it.
So thanks a lot, Tim, for joining me for this episode, and thank you for collaborating with us. And yeah, you can find all the information about Tim and his podcast that you should listen to for sure in the description box. So read and click the link, follow. And yeah, thank you so much.
It was really a pleasure. So thank you very much for this sight reading session.
Bye bye.